Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
D-Mace, Vinken, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinken here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Sportsnet, NHL insider Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Elliot, I know that you are at the Four Nations Face-Off Tournament. The league could not have scripted a better game for the opener of this tournament. Canada defeating Sweden in overtime. It looked like Canada was going to run Sweden out of the rink in the first period, but the Swedes battled back. Exhilarating overtime. What was your top takeaway from last night's game, Canada and Sweden?
Crosby is still the best, man. Crosby is still the best. And watching him and MacKinnon together here is going to do nothing to stop the people wanting to see those two play together, whether it's in Colorado or anywhere else. They're doing their interviews together. They were at the podium last night together. They were at practice this morning working on things together. If anybody thought this tournament was going to stop the Crosby and MacKinnon need to play together talk, it's going to continue. Great night here, and you're right, Adam. They couldn't have scripted it any better.
I just want to take a moment to share with everybody how unfair the Canadians' first goal of the game was. It was a power play goal scored by Nathan MacKinnon, assisted by Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid. I just want to point that out for everybody.
And it was as beautiful as you could imagine those three putting something together like that.
So
it was that happened right below me. Our set is directly above that net, and you could see it coming, and you could feel like the fans here, like, you know what, Adam, the funny thing is, so we've been talking about the Canadian power play for the last 3 days and how lethal it should be. And they get one on the first shift of the game, and we're kind of laughing, like, watch, they'll come out here, it'll probably be a disaster because they've been hyping it up. So we've been hyping it up so much. And then it just unfolds. Like, you wouldn't even draw it up to look that good. And it was a really special night, and I'm in the rink right now. The USA and Finland have done their morning skates, and they're playing here tonight. And actually, matter of fact, they're just trying out the light show while I'm standing here, and it's red, white, and blue, so I know who this is for. And it's snowing here. We're getting some really bad snow. You always worry about, even in a great hockey city like Montreal, you always worry about, okay, it's not Canada. What's the crowd going to be like? I heard there's a lot of Americans who came up here, so I hope this is just as good a show tonight.
Speaking of the Americans, they kick off the tournament tonight against Finland at 7 o'clock Central at Bell Center. Elliot, there was a time where the idea that the United States could even match the level of talent that Canada had, there was a time where that was a completely far-fetched notion. But the Americans over time have crept up on Canada. I've read in many places that the Americans are considered the favorite in this tournament. When you think about the rise of USA hockey in general and how it's gotten to this point, you look at the talent on that team. What do you attribute that to?
I think that the game is in more places. Wayne Gretzky's trade from Edmonton to the Kings, how many teams exist because of that trade, Adam? You look at, and I'm 54, like I'm a big Michael Jordan guy. Like as great as LeBron James is, I will always be a Michael Jordan guy because that was my guy. And, we used to have debates like who was better, Gretzky or Jordan. There'd be other baseball players who you'd talk about here and there, but it was like whether it was Ken Griffey Jr. or whoever it was, but it always came down to Gretzky and Jordan. And the one argument the puckheads used to make is like half a league is there because of Gretzky. And so I think a lot of it was that, his arrival. I think a lot of teams Like for example, the Dallas Stars, not only did they bring hockey to Texas, but, you know, they made sure they built a lot of rinks. Like I think that the toughest thing to get people to play hockey is just how expensive it is. Like, you look at these, like, I can't tell you now how many parents say to me, I can't believe my kid wants a $300 stick. And that to me is the biggest barrier to more people playing hockey, is the cost of the sport. But there's no question the exposure to it has grown, and the ability for people to at least go to games or see it has grown. And I think the more you see it, the more you want to try something. And we've definitely had that.
We talk with Elliot Freeman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot, you being there now, and obviously UC will be in net, I believe.
Yes,
what is the perception? What is the perception of UC throughout the league now, based upon what you are hearing? And will the or can the Four Nations tournament change that perception if it's turned? Toward the worst?
You know what, Derek, I always believe, and you played the game, you understand that, and this is that you can always rewrite your narrative. Mm-hmm. No matter how badly your season is going, all it takes is one big game to change it, and particularly when the stakes raise. Like in the NFL, you can have a terrible regular season as an individual, but if the playoffs start and you have a big playoffs, everybody forgets how bad your regular season was. And I think, you know, like, I don't think Saros, like, at the beginning of the year, I thought Saros was really good, even though the Predators were struggling, and eventually he just kind of got dragged down. And it's like, some of the talk around Team Finland here, Derek, is that this is going to be perfect for him, because I think he, like one of the players was saying, like, they can kind of tell he's, like, in shock by how bad Nashville's season has been. And it's really worn on him. Look, he got a big contract. He deserved it, but he wants to earn it. And, you know, he wants to win. And I think that the one thing that this allows him to do, because, you know, Nashville's not going to make the playoffs. We all know that. So what's he playing for? Well, suddenly he's been given something really important to play for. You know, Derek, the Finns are the real underdogs of this tournament. Mm-hmm. They have been devastated by injuries, especially on the blue line. You know, like I was saying to a couple of the players that some of us feel kind of sorry for them because of the way their roster has been devastated. They're like, don't feel sorry for us. Like, that's ridiculous. But I think that, you know, a good performance here from Saros could really go a long way to building himself back up. But, you know, Derek, that's the sense I really got from a couple players. Like, he's probably like a lot of players on the Predators. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in shock about, you know, just how this year has gone, and it's really affected them.
That's a great point. Elliot, I was listening to your podcast, and you had Michael Russo on there with you and Kyle talking about how UC Saros came across, that you could tell he had been a little bit beaten down by the lack of success. And, it, you know, he knows what his numbers, that the surface numbers, and we've argued about this here, right? People can jump all over him, say he's got a save percentage of under 900 and he's leading in the loss column and things like that. And if you look deeper, it's really as much of a reflection not only of his, he hasn't played great, but certainly the team around him has really struggled. But I'm sure as he carries those numbers onto this big stage, he's getting asked about it a lot, and you can tell it has weighed on him.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, like, he's a pro, and you guys don't need me to tell you, and the hockey fans don't in Nashville don't need me to tell you. You guys know how much that guy cares and how much pride he's got. You know, he's a smaller goalie who's one of the league's best goalies at a position where there's prejudice against his size, but he's carved out his role. And that tells you how much he cares and how hard he competes. And I think this year has really been painful for him and a lot of the other Predators players. But that's what this really does. Like, you know, like, again, him and the Finns are going in here as the real underdog. Like, there are guys, like, I'll tell you a story. So Jiri Lehtinen, who is the great Dallas Star player, who's the GM of this team, I saw him at an event in November. And at that time, Toronto had a Finnish defenseman, Jani Hakanpää, who wasn't playing. And he said to me, like, do you think he's going to play? And I said, they're telling me he's going to play. And he said, like, we only have 8 Finnish defensemen in the NHL right now. So if we start losing guys, we don't have anyone left. And so they got 2 injuries. So Hakanpää couldn't play. Haskinen, who's a big star in Dallas, he's out. And, you know, like, they're going to guys now who are, like, they're going to have guys in the lineup tonight who aren't full-time NHL players. And so, like, there's only one defenseman, Finnish defenseman, in the NHL who hasn't been on this roster at one point or another due to injuries. Like, that's how decimated they are. Mm. And, you know, like, if Saros has any kind of game and any kind of performance, I think it's going to do wonders for him.
It is going to be a big spotlight for sure. And speaking of that, Elliot, I've always tell people, when people ask me what's the best place to watch a game, I always say Montreal to me is the best. And I've never done a game in Montreal when Montreal has been a juggernaut. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like if, you know, at some point when they cycle back, if I'm lucky enough to still be doing this, when they cycle back into a run where they're really good for a number of years. But even when they've been kind of okay team, the atmosphere is so great in there. That was just...
It was great here last night.
Yeah, what a great thing for the league to be able to say, this is what we envisioned. What did we think we were going to see? But, it hit every note that you would want to hit. And then you had this 3-on-3, which was just absolutely out of the park.
Yeah, it was... And that's going to be a conversation here, guys. That's so they had 10. So the overtime here is 10-minute 3-on-3 followed by the shootout. And they're testing the goal siren here. It was 10-minute 3-on-3 followed by the shootout, and Marner scored the winner at 6:06. So we went past 5 minutes, which is what we normally deal with in the NHL season. And every player was getting asked about that last night and today. How would you feel about 10-minute 3-on-3? And like, MacKinnon was like, no, I was exhausted. And Laine was like, no, 5 minutes enough. Patrick Laine, but some other guys were like, yeah, I kind of liked it. And, you know, that's one thing. The GM meetings are in March, the general managers. And, you know, I was told this morning that because of what happened last night, and we'll see what happens for the rest of the tournament, this is going to be a conversation again. And maybe it's not 10, maybe it's 7, or maybe it's 8. But because of what happened in last night's game, we're gonna get a conversation about 3-on-3 overtime and making it longer. You know, I'll tell you this: so Saturday night is Canada USA from here, and everybody is looking forward to that. So far, the NHL has kept it a secret as who's singing the national anthem here on Saturday night. So they're obviously very excited about whatever they're planning to see. They haven't told us yet.
Elliot, I thought another thing that stood out last night, you've got these two teams full of great players. But even with that, like, D-Mace was texting me last night going, my God, MacKinnon and, you know, McDavid, when they get going, they still can rise to a level where they're still standing out way above in terms of just pure talent. If you hadn't ever watched a hockey game before, you would still notice those two guys and say, my goodness, who are these two guys? Right, that was what was really stood out last night.
I agree. I agree with that. I thought MacKinnon was phenomenal. I thought Crosby was incredible. I thought McDavid, even though like every time he touched the puck, I thought he was in danger of doing something. I thought it was like, I'm one of those people who kind of pick the U.S. at the beginning of the tournament because I think top to bottom, they're the best team. But Canada's elite talent, those guys are unreal, man. They are just a reminder of, like, you know, you get, when you do this job, you get to see people who are so good at what they do. And I'll tell you something else. And I think, Derek, you would really appreciate this as much as anyone else. So McDavid and MacKinnon, they went to the podium together after the game last night. They were done after midnight. And so today at the main rink, which is right downtown, only USA and Finland skated here because they're playing tonight. So Canada and Sweden, if they wanted to practice at all, they had to go to the Canadians' practice rink, which is about a 30-minute bus ride over a bridge. And there's a snowstorm here. And it was made into an optional, which means you don't have to take it. But two of the guys who were on the ice, one of the few players, were Crosby and MacKinnon, and working on something they didn't like that happened last night during the game. Like, they were right on the ice, two of the only players to skate, two of the best players just working on something. And it tells you that not only is greatness talent, but greatness is embracing the grind. And I wasn't there this morning, but I saw the video and I was like, that's embracing the grind. That's why those two guys are great. Like, basically hours after they finished, they had every excuse not to practice. They had to hop onto a bus in a snowstorm and go out there. And they went out there. And I just think that's incredible. I really do.
Elliot, one more before we let you go. There are some notable trade targets playing in this tournament. Around here, we're focused on Gus Nyquist, but there are others. I think of Brock Nelson, Ricard Raquel. Of those players who could be moved at the deadline, which player could best help his cause, or I guess help his team's cause, in terms of increasing his value ahead of the deadline?
Well, that's a great question. I think I'll say this. Rantanen is playing tonight for Finland, and, you know, he's a great player. I think we're all kind of wondering how Carolina is going to approach it here. I think a lot of eyes are going to be on him. He was in shock after that deal, and he hasn't started great yet in Carolina. He missed their last game. I think everybody's going to be watching him tonight to see what he kind of does. I think Raquel is a great pick, Adam. Obviously he's still got some time here to figure. He's still got some control over it. He can't be sent anywhere without his permission. But I thought he was really good last night, and to me that really stands out as a tremendous pick. You know, I would also say, I'll go with Rantanen tonight. I think that's a really interesting one that's going to develop over the next couple of weeks. And if he has a big tournament here, I mean, I think a lot of people would be interested, but that's going to drive up the price if Carolina has to flip him.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Elliot, great stuff. Enjoy the action tonight and the remainder of the tournament.
All right, go Saros. See you guys later.
Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. We'll react to Elliot. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063 the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063 the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. A programming note before we get to... It says Rob in Antioch. We will, before we get there, programming note. Jared is sick. So it's going to be a team effort here. Chase McCabe and Teron Davenport will host live from 2 to 3. The George Plaster Show on from 3 to 5.
Hold on one second.
That's going to be fun.
And then the Duel at Daytona coverage starting at 5 right here on 102.5, 106.3 the game. We're a family. One man goes down, the rest of us step up. Rob is in Antioch on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. What do you think the Predators should do moving forward, not only between now and the trade deadline, but basically now and the offseason? And what do you think they should do during the offseason? I'm curious. Not what do you think they will do, but what do you think they should do?
Thanks for the call. Okay, that's an interesting question. So... let's look toward the closest thing that's on the calendar, the NHL trade deadline, which is, what, three-ish weeks away, thereabouts. I mentioned Gus Nyquist in the previous segment with Elliot as a trade target. If I'm Gus Nyquist, I have a getaway bag packed in my closet because if it's up to me, there should be no chance that Gus Nyquist is a member of this team after the deadline. Now, what are you going to get for Gus Nyquist? I would guess probably a mid-round draft pick. You're not going to get a lot.
It's an interesting one because I think the thing that Nyquist brings to the table is, A, he's been through it before.
He's been traded twice, I believe, at the trade deadline in his career.
He's been an effective pickup, and the thing that makes him, I think, attractive is that he can play so many different roles for a team. He has been able to mesh because he can play left wing, he can play right wing. He can play on your second line, he can play on your third or fourth line. He can penalty kill, he can be a power play guy. He's got little tools, and when he's converting, he's an effective scorer. That's the problem. That's why his stock is down this year, is he just hasn't been able to convert, and it's put him on the list of almost every Predator, but he, maybe more so than anybody else, has had the most drastic drop-off in production. But that being said, I think another team could say, here's a guy that we're not going to have to spend 3 weeks teaching him our system. He will be able to mesh in quickly. He's a Swiss Army knife kind of guy. So when we say mid-round pick, I don't think it would be like a fifth-round pick. I think it could be a decent, maybe as high as a third, maybe even a second. I don't know, depend, or maybe a conditional kind of thing.
I would try to trade as many players as I could. Like, if you're expecting the Predators to have a sell-off like they did a couple of years ago when they traded Matthias Ekholm and Nino Niederreiter and Tanner Jeannot and Mikael Granlund, that's not going to happen this time around. So it's not going to be an exciting deadline from the Predators' perspective. I would try to move Michael McCarron. He's under contract through next season. Makes $900,000. I've seen his name on some trade boards. I'd move off of him. If you could take someone, if you could find somebody,
but
to
who
take,
plays his role on this team
at this point
for $900,000?
At this point,
that to me, it, on the surface, you would say, "Oh yeah, just trade him." He fights. Mm-hmm. He wins faceoffs. He can go up and not be overmatched by tough players. He's a little more undervalued than you might think, which is why I think a lot of teams who are trying to go on playoff runs think he's attractive. I'm curious what the market is, but because he's under contract at next year for such a cheap number, as opposed to Nyquist, who's a free agent, I wonder how they would weigh that. Because you're going to have to replace. You need somebody who can fight, you know. But you've got to have somebody who stands up for your skilled players. He does that. I understand the analytics people are like, you don't need that. You do need that. I promise you need that. So that's an interesting one to me. I don't know that it's a no-brainer. I think they will get interest in him. But so keep going.
The other player I would try to move, although he's injured right now, is Jeremy Lauzon.
Jeremy Lauzon, I don't know how close he is to helping somebody right
but
now.
But he's under contract through next season, so maybe
at a good price.
$2 million. But, you know, the other thing I would think
about. But if I'm trading for him, I need him for the playoffs this year. I don't know that we know.
That's fair.
If he is going to be effective between now and the playoffs. He hasn't played for a long time. They haven't said much about him, but that tells you he's a long way from getting on the ice. So his value is probably down unless you kind of know what his situation is.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not chalk that up as a for sure trade.
Just an option I would throw out there.
But if you're going to pay, you don't just toss him aside for nothing. When he is under price.
You're not giving him away.
You're listening to all offers. If you get something, you can't refuse. But I just don't think you're going to get value back for him right now with his injury situation.
The other thing I would look to do, and this may be more of an off-season thing, Willie, but although the caller did ask about the off-season, is if there's an opportunity to buy with an eye toward next season, I would do that as well. If a young player becomes available and the Predators can use some of their draft capital, they have 3 first-round picks in the upcoming draft. If there's a younger player that they could bring in who could be an impact player, hopefully, not for this season, but for future seasons, if that presents itself, I would be entertaining that as well. Now, which player could that be? Like, we've heard a lot about Dylan Cousins, right? Dylan Cousins, the young Buffalo Sabres center. his name is out there. If Barry Trotz thinks that Dylan Cousins, who's in his early 20s, who signed for several more years, I believe at around $7 million per season.
He's an interesting one. It's a big commitment.
Right. But if Barry Trotz thinks he's the answer at center and you have the opportunity to bring him in now or someone like that, I would consider that as well. I don't know how likely that is, but that's something I would also.
You hear his name a lot. I think in the coming weeks, that's a guy you're going to hear a lot. And so I think that makes sense if you think he's good. Because they're in the East, and the Predators have just recently played the Sabres twice, he hasn't been eye-popping for me. He did score a goal in the game the other night against Nashville. He's had one really productive season, and he's still very young. So you know he can do it. He hasn't played on a winning team. What are you trying to get? What do you have to give up to get him? That's a great question. He's a really intriguing one for me. The other guy that you haven't mentioned, I think I'm wondering what kind of market they might have, is Colton Sissons, who has played in a ton of playoff games, big playoff games, shined in playoff games. When used the right way, he helps you win in a lot of ways that people aren't going to be wowed with if you're not into the analytics or the nuances of the game. He can win a big face-off for you. He can penalty kill. He helps you win even if he's not scoring a lot of goals. And for a team that needs depth, he's an intriguing guy. So these are all names to watch. And all that being said, how much cap space are you going to have to really try to make some moves in the offseason to get to the caller's question? It's a really good question. Can I find a better... to me, it's more on defense that these questions have. And the ever-present question of the center, right? You're always – but the centers just don't become available in the offseason very often. That's why Cousins, as underwhelming as he has been, but the upside that he's got is a rare case. But on D, they've got to figure out, who can I put with Brady Shea to bring out the best in Brady Shea? He has been a major disappointment. I think he would tell you he's majorly disappointed with how this season has gone. He is a guy that owns up to it. He knows it. He's a good guy. He's a good player that is lost right now. Who is the right guy to put with Roman Josi to bring him back to Norris Trophy level? Those are essential questions, I think, for Barry Trotz. You can figure out the third pair. Third pair you can figure out. Who to put with Josi, who to put with Shea, assuming that those guys as a pair aren't going to happen. Big, big questions for the offseason.
Andy is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Andy, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all's hockey talk. I've got a question. I know it sounds crazy, and you can call me crazy, but I've often wondered, with Josie's skills, if he was moved to the forward side, would it prolong his career as an offense, you know, as an offensive generator, whether it's center or wing, if we have enough defensive players, you know, in our minor leagues to bring up. But that's my question. What about Josi on offense? Would it prolong his career, and would it help the Predators?
Thanks for the call, Andy. You're not crazy. There are no crazy questions on this program. Now, I don't know if it would prolong his career. He's a pretty elusive skater. I mean, he does have the puck a lot, so therefore he's prone to being hit more. Mm-hmm. But Josi, you know, the most recent example of a player who has shifted between positions is Brent Burns. Brent Burns, I believe, began his career, Willie, as a forward. And when he was traded from Minnesota, from Minnesota to San Jose?
I think so.
He was actually...
I don't really remember exactly when it happened.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
He was a forward. He shifted between the two. Now he's a defenseman. He's been a defenseman for several years. Now, Roman Josi is certainly a talented player. You just don't see a lot of that. We were talking about dual position players with Travis Hunter. You don't see a lot of that shifting in hockey.
You don't. And so I think that the answer is really no. It's a really interesting question, because you're thinking of, how do I get the most out of Roman Josi, who's still under contract for three more years after this year, and he has had a down year? I'm really curious if this 2-week break will help him refresh and get healthier. I don't feel like he's been healthy. He has not been zooming around the ice. And I hope, and I believe, I can't say I know for sure, but I believe that some physical things have slowed him down much more than just simply he's a year older. And the Predators have to hope that that's the case in the long term. But his unique skill set, his ability to cover all of the ice that he covers when he's at his best, that's cut out for being a defenseman. It's really not. He doesn't have a forward skill set to me. So I think that it's much more of, let's get Roman Josi back to, number one, having a partner that brings out the best in him and getting him 100% healthy to do his thing.
615-737-1025. Willie, you are a seasoned broadcaster. With all of the games you've called, I'm sure you've made a flub. But we're going
to
take a moment to talk about one major flub we heard on a recent SEC broadcast. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
Coach, everybody talks about the SEC being the best conference in college basketball, but the conference is just 500 since conference play started. What do you make of that?
I think it's been a really disappointing start to conference play. I feel like we should, I feel like we're not living up to the expectations, just being at 500 as a conference. And I just, I'm kind of looking around at the other programs in the league, but like, guys, we got to pick this up. This is embarrassing. And so we'll find a way. I believe in this league. I think we definitely have an upside, and we're going to work really hard to get there.
That was Kentucky men's basketball coach Mark Pope discussing the SEC's collective 500 record in conference play. And you might be asking yourself, why are we talking about this? Of course the SEC is 500 in conference play because all of the teams have to play each other. Willie, why don't you tell us exactly why we're discussing this?
Well, it's actually really funny now. I would equate it a little bit to if you fell for a prank somewhere along the course of your life, maybe not on national
TV,
but you fell for a prank of a brain teaser where you say, there's one where like, hey, this plane crashed and there were a certain amount of people on the Canadian side of the border and there was a certain amount of people, they throw you off and they say, where would you bury the survivors? And we're like, oh, well, maybe it's in Canada because it's over here and you said it was over here. But you don't bury survivors, right? So you just overlook the obvious. And there's a bunch of brain teasers like that. We could go through them, right? So this happened to Carl Ravitch the other night. Alabama was waxing their opponent, right, which they do most nights.
It was Texas, I believe.
Yeah, they just whipped them. Like, and they're way ahead, so they're looking for little things. And so there was a guy that sarcastically put out a tweet. I forget. It's just some guy who's a big Alabama fan, and it was on the Twitter feed. And he was jokingly saying, oh, here's ESPN hyping all the SEC teams. Did you know that they're 500 in league play since January 4th? And here they are still hyping them up. Biased to the SEC, ESPN. And he was just being funny. But somewhere, I don't know if it was Carl Ravitch himself or some statistician or producer that thought that it was just an actual stat that was relevant. But Carl Ravitch, for whatever reason, decides to put it in play.
So think about it. We know how dominant they were in the non-conference season, the SEC. They were 185-23. Since January 4 into Tuesday, the SEC teams are 82-82. It's not as if one team or two teams or three. They're 82-82. Like, there's been no ability to pull away. There's no dominant group of teams.
He just made it worse. He's trying to explain
yes, that's a big thing. Wow, they have really leveled off. But by definition, every conference is exactly 500 in conference play. This is so funny. People saw this, and of course, the the smart aleck that tweeted this goes, I got him. I got Ravage and Dykes. They fell for it, you know? And so they're trying to act like this is a, you know, some sort of analysis that is really next level. And so you have people just being really jumping on
they're
this.
They're trolling them.
College basketball. They're trolling them. Yeah. They're trolling them. So he got buried on Twitter. College basketball report. Every basketball conference's record in conference play. Atlantic 10, 83-83. ACC, 116-116. Big 10, 120-120. It goes through every conference, all 30 conferences or whatever. Uh-huh. So, I mean, obviously, every conference is exactly 500 in conference play, so that is not a relevant stat. But this is where Ravage probably made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, oh, I'm such an idiot, I messed up. You know, and you laugh at it along with everybody else. But he first came out and said, it was tongue in cheek. I was just kidding. Obviously, this or this, you didn't. And everybody was like, nah, that sounded pretty sincere. We can play it again if you want. And then he did have to come to grips with it today. And I'm glad he did. He said, look, I got to take the L on this
one. Take it, man, like the youngest say.
Because he got absolutely buried. And I think he got buried twice as bad because he tried to act like it wasn't
a big
a screw up.
Yeah.
And that's what, to me, I've tried to learn my lesson, mm-hmm. and it will probably happen to me someday. I'm trying to avoid being on awful announcing for something really bad, and so far so good, knock on wood, but we all make screw ups, right? And when you mess up, you have to own it.
Especially
you have to own it.
So
it's
much.
Live TV. You're going to screw up. On the radio, we've said a lot of things that are dumb, right? You have to own up to it. Because if you talk long enough, you will get trapped. So you can't let your ego and your quest for perfection get in the way.
What made it even worse, I think he realized as he was talking, like, this ain't right.
He's like, I'm committed to it.
He said, I'm committed to it now. He was like, I'm going. Because there was a part where I'm listening to him, I'm like, yeah, he's just going with this now because he's like, I'm in it.
Nobody's been able to separate. Well, wait a minute. Alabama is 9-1. Auburn is 9-1. wait a minute.
I think he realized, but he just tried to go with it.
Oh, man. Steven is on our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Steven, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Adam.
Yes.
You gotta put Willie in his place.
Why do I need to do that?
O'Reilly, Yossi, Forsberg, Marchessault, Steven freaking Stamkos, and O'Shea. And don't even get me started on the goalie. Haven't started his contract yet. For 8 years. They're terrible. If this was any other coach, he would be fired in the NHL. Period. Fired. Done. I know Willie gets a check from the Predators, so we'll give him a pass. But you guys have got to get on to him about this.
I will.
It's ridiculous.
I thank you for the call, Steven. I will say, as it relates to getting, if you want to talk about getting on Brunette, I spent an hour on this program after 25 games saying why I would fire the coach. So I was there early in the season. We're going to talk more about the state of the Predators tomorrow. If Brunette is not fired this offseason, I think he's going to enter next season with an incredibly short leash. I don't think he would get the same leeway next season if they have the same start as they had this season.
I would think that that's fair at this point. I do think there are teams that just have a bad year. But like I said, the best coaches find a way to get out of the mud. And it's too late to save this season. And what they're going to try to do, I think, is try to reap the benefits. If they don't move up and they end up with a lottery pick and they get a little lucky in the lottery and they pick fourth or third or fifth or sixth, that's an opportunity that this franchise usually doesn't have because they've been a pretty consistent winning team. I get the caller's point, and it's easy. If you want to listen to Jared and think everything's so simple, you just fire the coach, then fine. But I don't look at the game that way, never have. I'm around it every day. I don't think it's that simple. And I do think it's wise sometimes to give it a little more time than just have a knee-jerk reaction of, they stink, therefore fire the coach.
I'm hoping, by the way, in a non sequitur, that the two grumpy old men who were on this station from 6 to 9 a.m., Joe Rexroad and Paul Kaharski, take time to watch USA and Finland. They both dislike the idea of this tournament.
I love this
tournament. Nick Kieser tried his darndest to convince them otherwise. I think their argument was, you know, why pause the season for 2 weeks to have this tournament? It's an incomplete tournament because there are only four nations in it. By the way, this tournament will continue every other year, and the expectation is that more nations will be involved. I believe that is the case. But Derek loves the Predators. Mm-hmm. Derek, I would say otherwise, he's a casual hockey fan.
Yeah.
You should have seen him texting us last night. He was into it last night. This is great for casual fans. It's slow time in the sports calendar. Football is over. You're watching the best players in the world, most of them, because some of them are from countries that aren't playing in this tournament. Most of the best players in the world are giving their all for their country. I'm fascinated to see what the ratings are. But casual fans, I think, should jump all over this.
If you got a chance to watch McDavid or McKinney, you do it. Even if you just know the names and don't watch hockey, watch the four nations playoff.
Yep. Yeah,
because I mean, if you want to see some of the best players all on one ice playing competitively, not an all-star game, but competitively, you want to watch this because it may just turn you into a hockey fan.
I do think they should be careful not to do it too often.
Yeah,
because they're going to the Olympics next year. Mm-hmm. Too much of it, I do think it's old, but this. It hasn't been done in 10 years.
But I think hockey needs it.
Yes, and that's why these players want it. It is high-level intensity. This is not the Pro Bowl. This is not an all-star game. These are teams playing for real. The theater tonight, from a Predators perspective, a loaded USA team that's got the most firepower they've ever had against a big underdog Finland whose best defenseman is injured and two of the next best defensemen are also out. UC Saros facing that firepower, that is going to be worth watching tonight, I guarantee you. That's on ESPN tonight at 7.
At 7 o'clock, but coming up next, Chase and Teron Davenport will have you for an hour, followed by the George Plaster Show from 3 to 5, and NASCAR coverage starting at 5 right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, wonderful, and blessed Thursday. Peace.